This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right. Great to have you with us. Bo's at what, 235?
Correct.
Yeah. Bo Smolka. Talk with him. Should be a lot of fun talking with him, too. About the Ravens. That should be quite a game with the Steelers. Starts tonight with the Eagles. Games at the Link. For whatever reason, and I can't put my finger on it as to why, but the Commanders have matched up well with the Eagles over the last few years. Even though the Eagles are obviously the better team, I mean, they're the better team. I mean, it's simple, right? But the Commanders play them to the wire and have won at times. Game is tonight at 8:15 on Prime. And look, for Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, Kaylee Hartung, look, they've been waiting for a game like this. I mean, they've had a better schedule to work with this year. But man,
Al might be smiling when he comes on air tonight for the first time in a little bit.
No, it's just, you know what? I mean, they've got a playoff game, too, this year, by the way. Prime does. It's not on Peacock this year. It's going to be on Prime, which is the way it should have been anyway. For goodness sakes, you pay all this money. By the way, one quick note. Did you know Tampa Bay cannot play at the Trop this year? So they're going to play their games this season at the Yankees training complex, which has 11,000 seats. I mean, I've been to the ballpark. I've seen it because it's right next to where, literally right next to where the Bucks play. So they are going to play at Steinbrenner Field. Now, they averaged about 16,000 last year, so they got 11,000. Now, the question is, what do you do with the Trop? Because, I mean, I don't know if it's possible for them to start building the new ballpark, which is going to be right next to it. Or do you put the roof on it? What do you do? I don't know what you do with it.
The story I read said that structurally it's okay.
I know it's okay, except for
obviously the roof, and it was going to. I mean, the amount of money that it's going to cost—it's over $150 million or something like that—to fix the roof, and the timing of it just doesn't make a lot of sense if they can figure out what to do with the Rays for that season, because I think they plan on opening the new ballpark in 28.
I think it's 28.
And that's almost $1 billion. Plus, they were talking, you know, now they have to come up with, you know, money. You know, money to pay for some, for the damages to the Trop and build this field, and I don't know where they come up with all this money, you know, to repair the Trop and to build a new stadium. So,
yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I think they have to make a hard decision at some point.
Yeah, I know it's hot, it's humid down there. But do you consider playing at the Trop with no roof?
The story I read, that was not one of the options, and I wonder why it wouldn't be.
Wonder what? Now, I realize maybe it wouldn't be right now because, like, you have to remove the roof because they're still, you know, there's still the girders and everything else are up there. I wonder why it's not an option.
I wonder if it's an indoor stadium, if they don't waste their time with real good draining, and now there's not real, if there's not a lot of drainage under the field.
You know what? There are a lot of reasons, yeah. But, yeah, they're going to at least play this season at Steinbrenner Field. I mean, it's 11,000 seats outdoors. It's grass.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's a nice little ballpark.
Somebody said somewhere, does that mean the Rays have to fire Kevin Cash three times this season? And hire a criminal to find something on Jose Siri.
Just awful. Oh, there's all the Steinbrenner jokes start. But think about this. Major League Baseball in 2025 will have a team playing in an 11,000-seat minor league ballpark and another team playing in a 14,000-seat minor league ballpark. The two problem children of the league, Tampa Bay and Oakland.
We haven't talked about it much over the summer, but man, I think we ask a lot at the beginning of the year if we thought they would ever get to Las Vegas, and it's looking more and more like they might not be.
Then what do they do?
I don't know. I know he obviously can't go back with his hat in his hands to Oakland.
Boy.
I mean, if they get a new ownership, maybe the MLB finds them a new ownership group and then they go back to Oakland, because I don't think Sacramento is going to be viable.
No.
Or maybe let him move to Portland or something along those lines.
Let's see. Las Vegas A's. Let's just put this in there and see what it says. Let's see, Las Vegas A's Stadium. A's unveil renderings. Yeah, that was on March 5th.
They got the drawings.
Okay, so 13 days ago. Let's see. John Fisher pledges $1 billion to construction of A's Stadium in Las Vegas. Okay.
I feel like if you make that pledge a year ago, you probably have yourself a new stadium in Oakland, my friend.
Yeah. With all due respect, what's more dynamic? It's Las Vegas, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it says here, A's still don't have financing in place for their Las Vegas stadium, so let's see what that says. All right. By the way, it's a non-retractable roof, but it's open-ended and things like that. John Fisher looking to cash in on the team's move to Las Vegas by selling off a minority stake that values the franchise at $2 billion, a whopping 66% increase over its most recent valuation. Fisher, an heir to the Gap clothing empire, co-founded by his parents, Donald and Doris Fisher, plans to start shopping a 25% chunk of the team with a price tag of $500 million in the coming days.
Wonder if he's looking for some Mrs. Adelson money.
Maybe.
Isn't that the woman that bought that's the woman's name that bought the Mavericks, right, from Cuban?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Now, but then 5 days after that article came out, he pledged $1 billion toward the construction. Right? And basically, and U.S. Bank and Goldman Sachs will offer a $300 million loan, according to club executive Sandy Dean. Okay? Dean said four letters will be presented by December at the December 5th authority meeting, asserting construction details and financing will be in place. Final approvals are expected to be made at that meeting that allows construction of a $1.5 billion, 30,000-seat domed ballpark with a capacity of up to 33,000. We feel like we're on the right path, and it will become clear in the months ahead, Dean told the board. Construction is expected to begin in the spring, and I think it's going to be where the Tropicana was, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, I do know they blew up the Trop to start, to at least they've gotten that far so far.
Right. As much as $380 million in public funding will go into the building of the stadium, which will be held on the Las Vegas Strip. See, now, when it comes to stuff like this, if he's pledging a billion and a half, right, and then public funding is $380 million, I have no problem with that. Right? As much as it's great that Jerry Jones can build his own building, that Robert Kraft can build his own building, right? I don't mind when the percentage is so heavily weighted on the ownership side, but there is some public funding, because between restaurants that will go in around it and so forth, it's a revenue producer for the area. I know you've got all these blah, blah, blah studies. You know what? You know what gets me about studies? Right? Just get on the ground and look, will you? Just walk around. You'd be shocked what management by walking around means. Right? Jeez, try and, you know, the night of a ball game, try and get into a restaurant before the game. Can you?
Not usually.
No. Walk. Okay. Don't just sit there and go, I sat here in my office and did an economic study. Get off your backside. Get out of the office and go walk around. Right? We do the study in 10 days. Souvenir shop. Looks pretty packed to me. Restaurant. Can't get in. Can't do this. Hotels. Hey, it looks like there's people in there. What the heck? The economic impact isn't as great as people say. Oh, just shut up. I go to games all the time. I know what the economic impact is. I see it for myself. You want to know why? I'm there. Golly, it's like all these people that do metrics all the time. Get out of the office and actually physically go someplace and find out for yourself. Then write the report. How many of these people that write these reports leave the office?
I'm going to give you the Dave Spadaro answer. I don't know. I haven't seen the metrics, but my eyes tell me that I think you're right. Yeah,
exactly. Every game I go to is a fam. Every game I go to is a fam. Right? Restaurants? I walk around, packed. People walking all over the place. Souvenir shop, packed. Walking all over the place. You know, I talked to some people. Yeah, I came in from out of town. I stayed at the hotel. Right? All you have to do is walk around a little bit. It's amazing what you find out when you're actually there. I think they've said a Penn State football home game, for example, has a $16 million economic impact on State College. The Jordan Center per year has about a $30 to $32 million impact between concerts and things like that. I'll give you one where, like, I've got questions about what the economic impact is, and that's the Arts Festival here. There are a lot of people that come into town, and yes, they go to restaurants, yes, they go to bars, so that's really good. But, like, I question how many people stay in hotels for it, because I think a lot of people are, like, day trippers. So there's a little bit of a difference there, but in terms of restaurants and bars, the impact is off the charts, especially on Friday night and Saturday night of the Arts Festival. In terms of staying in hotels, not really.
I've always kind of felt that was more of a local thing anyway. You know,
it's a day
trip,
but yeah. there's people that come in from out of state,
yeah.
And there are obviously some artists that come in from out of state. It's a national festival, but in terms of the people that go to it, yeah, it's a day tripper thing. Hey, we want to go over? Sure, let's go over. Okay. You know,
I agree with you generally on your point, but I do wonder how much economic impact an A's stadium is going to have on the Strip in Las Vegas.
Right. No, I mean, that's a little different. There's no question, because they have natural tourism to begin with. Come on out. Let's go to the Bellagio. Let's go to Caesars. Let's go to the Suits. Let's go to Trump. Let's go to Wynn. Notice I slipped the suit in there.
I do. I mean, I feel like they're going to have to be pretty darn good to draw a crowd because, you know,
I agree.
With all those options, why would you want to go to a crappy baseball game in Las Vegas in July?
Again, because you're talking about 81 times you have to do this.
Yeah.
It's 81 times. Now, let's give some credit, though, to the hockey team. The hockey team sells out. They've played well, but they sell out. It's 41 times a year. They do well. I think it helps that they were the first ones in there. And not only were they the first ones in there, they made the Stanley Cup final the first year. Like, hey, we're good at hockey. Okay.
And I think they've done a real good job at attracting, for lack of a better word, the natives, you know, the people that actually live in Las Vegas.
Which is who you have to attract.
Yes. Yeah, I have some, it's actually a photographer that used to work at the newspaper. He and his wife moved out to Las Vegas, and that's one of the things they really took to is they go to a lot of Golden Knights games, and that you're right, that place is always packed, it's always loud. It looks like a great time, to be honest.
And they've done a great job of attracting college basketball tournaments.
Yes.
Not just in season, but the number of postseason conference tournaments that they have there, tremendous. You know, now the door is open for them hosting the NCAAs. Maybe not the regional, but the opening two rounds. I mean, it's open for them to do that. Let's give credit where credit's due. I mean, they've done a great job with all that. But the question is, can you support 81 times a year baseball? Now, this is what you will get. Okay? This is what you will get. Okay? The Red Sox are going to play in Las Vegas. But you're going to have a lot of Red Sox fans saying, hey, look, let's go out there. Let's go over. Let's gamble over at the MGM, at, you know, Mandalay Bay, Caesars, you know, and then we'll take the ball game in. And then we'll go to the Bellagio, the win. You know what I mean? We're going to turn it into a weekend. You're going to get a lot of people from out of town combining seeing their team with also doing what you do in Las Vegas. I think that's going to happen at times.
And I wonder if they try and tap into that, you know, a little bit into California, because you know as well as I do that California is a lot of transplants. So, you know, that's a chance to draw those Yankees and Red Sox fans from, you know, from Southern California too.
Right, exactly, because it's what, 5 hours from Los Angeles to Las Vegas?
I think my brother has a place in Palm Springs. I think it takes him 5.5 hours when they go over.
That's not bad.
No.
That's nothing. It doesn't take long to do that. So, that's where they need to take advantage of it. Nobody sits there and says, hey, let's go to Oakland, with all due respect, nobody sits there and says, hey, let's go to Oakland for the weekend and watch the Sox play. But they will say, hey, what do you say? Well, hey, let's plan a road trip to Las Vegas and, like, see the Sox play a couple of games. And then, you know, and then make it into a Vegas weekend. You know what I mean? I think that might be a possibility. And the ballpark's not going to be that big. It's 30,000 to 33,000 seats.
And it'll be air-conditioned, which will be an attraction in July in Las Vegas.
Why, yes, it will. And it's not. I guess it's not going to be a retractable roof. Meanwhile, Tampa, they got a problem.
Yeah.
Until they build the new place, they've got a problem. Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Back with more in a moment. Bo Smolka, final half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Hyundai is going to make this a November to remember. Sunbury Motors Hyundai received 10 truckloads of new Hyundais, and we need to make room now. Choose from over 55 brand new Hyundai Tucson's with savings over $6,500. Sunbury Motors has the full-size SUV Hyundai Santa Fe discounted up to an unbelievable $6,197 off. Both the Tucson and Santa Fe have financing as low as 0% for 48 months and 1.99%
10% for 60 months.
Remember, all new Hyundais come with America's best warranty, 10 years, 100,000-mile powertrain. If you want to have a fun day, why not buy a Santa Cruz Hyundai? This nimble pickup starts at $31,340. The Santa Cruz is discounted up to $49,50 with 23 available. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza is going to save you the most money all year now. 10 truckloads of new Hyundais will make this month a November to remember with your next Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Kudos for that focus group. They're the ones that came up with the name of the show. This half hour being brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Pickle bar, led by my two personal favorites, the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. Stock up now for a big weekend. At Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I can part of that big weekend, Ravens and Steelers. Pleased to be joined by Bo Smolka, who covers the Ravens. Bo, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hi, good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it should be pointed out, Eric DaCosta, just so you know, his daughter is in my class. So.
Oh, that's right. She's up at Penn State. That's right.
And she's a terrific student. I mean, really good. All right, so... Let's start with this. The Kyle Hamilton situation, where, to your knowledge, does it stand right now with him? Because I think he's one of the top 15 defenders in the league.
Oh, I agree with that. I just got off the practice field. He's out there today, which honestly surprised me a little bit. But he is a tough dude. Mm-hmm. I think he's the kind of guy that's going to want to play, and you're going to have to kind of tie him down to keep him from playing. I, you know, a week ago, I didn't think he was going to play this Sunday. Seeing him out here now, and we're not allowed to watch all of practice, but the right. fact that he's out there trying tells me he's going to give it a go. I suspect the Ravens will call him questionable. I think he'll be listed as limited on the injury report. I think he'll be questionable for the game. I think they're going to try to have him out there to some extent. He's probably not going to be 100%, but I think 70% Kyle Hamilton's better than some of the other options. So if I'm the Ravens, I'm encouraged by seeing him out there today. He won't be 100%, I don't think, but that's the latest.
All right, so Kyle Hamilton is a player. When you're 6'2", or excuse me, I think he's 6'4", 6'4", has some speed, you can play him deep, you can play him in the box, and he knows how to play the game. He's not just an athlete running around out there. He can play. You see him all the time, Bo. How special is this guy?
I think he's terrific. And, you know, I know people talk about playing him deep. I've thought for 2 years now, I think they're a much better team when he plays near the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
They'll use him as like a dime linebacker. They'll play him as a slot defender. He is extremely good at doing things like diagnosing and breaking up these bubble screens and these jet sweeps, because he'll break a tackle or he'll get off a block. Try to block him at the line of scrimmage. It doesn't work, and then he's a very physical tackler. So time and again, you see these bubble screens set up to the outside, and he breaks up. He breaks his block and just blows up the play. I just think they're a better team with him playing near the line of scrimmage. He's also a rangy defender. Like you said, he's 6'4", and he can cover. They use him all over the field. But in my mind, they're better when he plays near the line of scrimmage. He's a terrific talent.
Right. No, I agree. How have you felt about the Ravens' pass rush to this point of the season, Bo?
Well, it's been fair. I mean, everything about this defense has been fair at best.
Which is a surprise.
Defense has been a mess all year.
Yeah.
The pass rush at times has looked okay, and at times it's kind of not gotten home. And if they're not getting there, and these quarterbacks are having time against this secondary, that's a problem. The edge rusher guys have been okay at times. Kyle Van Noy flashed right a lot early in the year. He's kind of fallen off lately. your guy Adafe Owe has had his moments, and then he's not there sometimes. It's been inconsistent from that group. In the interior, you got Justin, or now he's called Nnamdi Matabike, who is a really good interior defensive line pass rusher, and he had 3 sacks against Cincinnati. He had a big impact on that game. They've got another interior guy named Travis Jones, who's just like an absolute bulldozer inside. He's good against the run, but he's good pressing the pocket as well. I think those two interior guys can be a big factor in the pass rush. The traditional edge rush guys, like I said, they've been, I would overall say they've been inconsistent.
Okay, let me ask you about Roquan Smith. It's a huge acquisition when they got him, right? How's he played? Has he been all right? Has he been good? Has he been not quite as expected? Your thoughts?
Last year, I thought he was better than they could have expected. I think he was terrific last year. I think he's regressed a little bit this year. He doesn't seem as active to the ball. I don't know what it is. He seems a touch slower to me, and I think others have agreed with that. I'll say this. He's still a very physical player. To my mind, more often this year, I have seen him kind of on his feet standing at the end of the play when there's a pile on the ground than actually in the pile where he always used to be. I don't know if he's getting pushed by blockers better than he was last year. He has been less of a player this year than last year. He was great. When they traded for him, he was everything they could have hoped he would be. And so it just turned out to be, it looked like a great midseason trade for the Ravens 2 years ago. He was consistently strong player last year. I haven't seen quite that from him this year. I think he's taken a step back.
Okay, so I'll balance this. I'll get to Lamar on the offense in a moment. But now let's balance this out. They have to face a Russell Wilson quarterbacked Steeler team. How different are they because Wilson is now the quarterback, and what problems can that present for the Ravens?
Well, I think it's going to be really interesting because I haven't seen a lot of the Steelers. I watched their game with Washington last week, and I mean, he's obviously a talent guy. The Ravens are saying all the right things about him. He will probably take his deep shots, and the Ravens better cover. And you saw, if you saw anything with the Bengals, they did not cover Ja'Marr Chase deep at all in that game. So they better cover, and they better tackle when those guys catch the ball deep. To me, the interesting thing is when I look at these kind of charts that show where Russell Wilson has thrown the ball, he hasn't thrown a lot over the middle of the field. No. And the middle of the field has killed the Ravens this year. Middle linebacker depth and at the safety depth, they have just gotten killed in the middle of the field. And John Harbaugh said as much. He said fixing that is their number one priority. I think it's going to be fascinating to see if the Steelers dial up some ways to exploit that, whether that's Freiermuth, whether it's pass patterns with the receivers. Yeah. The Ravens have been a mess in the middle of the field this year. So you've got to cover deep, obviously. You got to keep your eye on Pickens, and you can't let him get behind you or get open in the middle. But I think the middle of the field is where the Ravens have really, really suffered this year. And it's going to be interesting to see if the Steelers try to attack it that way, which is, from what I can tell, not exactly what they've done.
All right, so now on offense, Derrick Henry, has he been what you thought he would be?
He's been everything I think they thought he would be. I'll say this. I've covered this team for 15 years now, and I mean, I'm around these guys a lot. He is the most physically imposing, impressive human being I think I've ever seen. I mean, he's an absolute physical freak. He's like 260 pounds with like 0.00 body fat and runs he's incredible. And the thing about him, at his age, everyone thought he was going to be wearing down, and he just hasn't shown it. He's still, I think, is a great fit for this offense. Eric DaCosta actually tried to trade for him at the deadline last year, and they never pulled it off. They signed him this offseason, and the question was, look, they looked at his stats the last couple of years and said, well, his yards per carry is going down. He's 30 years old. He's had so many carries. He's going to hit that wall. And he might sometime, but he hasn't yet. And he has been everything they could have hoped for this offense. I think his game has improved or has taken a kick up because he's playing with Lamar Jackson, and teams aren't keen on him as a one-back guy in this backfield because you have to worry about Lamar Jackson running. He's got a Pro Bowl fullback blocking in front of him and Patrick Ricard. And the thing that he's done his whole career is he just gets stronger as the game goes on. And that comes back to his conditioning, I think. But you see these games where you unleash him in the fourth quarter when the defense has been on the field for 68 snaps already, and that's when he pops the 55-yard run. He did it against Cincinnati in the game they won in overtime at Cincinnati. He's done it in three or four different games. So he's been, for what they want to do on offense, and with Lamar Jackson as this running threat at quarterback, and the way that they like to win on the ground, he's been everything they could have hoped for.
Zay Flowers. Look, there are some young players that could have gone through the AFC Championship game like he did last year, and it would have affected them for a while. What does it tell us about Zay Flowers that he's had the kind of season he's had to this point?
Yeah, he made that fumble at the goal line is the one you're referencing in the game against the Chiefs. And, and I mean, everyone here has said from the time they drafted him, the guy's got a good head on his shoulders, and he is who he is. I don't think they ever worried about that, and to your point, it hasn't happened. He's the same guy, and to stay, he's a really dangerous receiver. He's really shifty. He'll catch a 6-yard pass and make six people miss and turn into a 35-yard touchdown. He can do that. He and Lamar Jackson have this kind of thing going. They're very much in sync together, so he's been very consistent. We were joking, not joking really, we were observing that in that game at Pittsburgh last year when the Ravens dropped so many passes and lost the game, Flowers was one of them. He dropped a couple open balls in that game. One of them he tripped in on the turf and was wide open and couldn't handle it. So they all had a kind of a rough day that day in Pittsburgh last year, but Flowers is terrific that way. He'll catch the short one and make defenders miss. Very, very difficult to get down after the catch. But in terms of kind of bouncing back from that end zone fumble in the AFC Championship game, I don't think the team ever had any worry about him doing that. And he said he was going to turn the page on it. We talked to him the next day, and he has. And he's that kind of player, and he's a huge part of what they want to do on offense.
Yeah, it's one thing to say it. It's another thing to do it. And you know what? He's doing it. I mean, that's you know, to me, it's always the proof is in the pudding. Everybody always says they're going to turn the page.
Totally fair. He has.
And that's where I give him all the credit in the world. He's like, yeah, I'm going to turn the page. Okay. And, well, we're more than halfway through this season. The guy is a terrific, terrific receiver. What has Mark Andrews' presence meant? Because, look, his presence wasn't there all last year. What's it meant this year?
Well, it wasn't there the first part of this year either, and that's what people were surprised about. The first four or five games, he was kind of a non-factor, and everyone's going, what's wrong with Andrews? What's wrong with Andrews? I don't know if he was still fully back from the injury at the beginning of the year, and I don't know if you guys heard around here, but he was involved in this kind of scary auto crash during training camp on the way to the facility one day, and he was fine. They said he walked away from it and everything was fine, but that might have affected him, too. He might have been more physically banged up by that than they let on early. I don't know. But he was not a factor early in the year. But he is also the guy that Lamar Jackson trusts. Zay Flowers has moved up there, but Mark Andrews is a guy that Lamar Jackson implicitly trusts. They came into the league together as rookies. They've been 1 and 1A together in the passing game their whole time here. And when they need a big play, Andrews is often the guy he looks for. Having said that, Isaiah Likely has turned into this really good pass-receiving tight end as well, and that makes them harder to defend. But Andrews is always, always a guy that on, like, third and five, that's a guy that Jackson's going to be looking for.
Is this the longest you've ever gone in an interview without being asked about Lamar?
Yeah, probably, to be honest with you. But you got to work your way there, I guess.
And I am working my way there because, you know what? And there's a reason for that. I wanted to get a lot of other people in there that have been important to the Ravens' success, then get to him last, because that way people hear about the success of the others first. That's why I'll do these things in patterns like that. And that's now we get to him. You've seen the spectacular from him over and over again. Is this just a continuation of the spectacular, or is there some things that he's doing now that's even better than what you've seen the last 3-4 years?
I mean, the thing with him is, as you said, I mean, any single play can turn into the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. And we've seen it a lot. I mean, the game the other night against Cincinnati, where he's back to the 30-yard line, or the first game at Cincinnati, he's going to be sacked at the 30. He stiff arms a defensive lineman, wiggles away, and throws a touchdown. That should never, he shouldn't be able to do that. And the other one, he down the sideline and almost scores. It's just so fun with him that way. I'll say the two things, one thing that's really improved from him, I think, is the decision making. And he's only thrown two interceptions this year, 24 touchdowns, just right. Two interceptions. And both interceptions actually went off the hands of his receiver and probably shouldn't have been interceptions. He's done a better job of not forcing a throw. He's done a better job of unloading the ball, and meaning getting it out of bounds and not trying to make a hero play when there's not one there to be had. So that taking care of the ball is a huge part of it. That's one reason why his passer rating is the best in the league right now, because he's not turning the ball over. He's still a very dangerous runner. He's connecting better on the deep ball than he had in the past. He still doesn't throw a ton of them, but he's throwing it better. He's using more of the field better than he has in the past. He's handling the blitzes better, and that goes also back to making good decisions. So it's probably all related. He's also in his sixth or seventh year, and he said before it's more mature for him now. It feels different. It feels slower. Everything looks, I want to say easy, but he diagnoses it better. It's just everything about it, being a seventh year versus a first, second year, trying to do too much. But I think the decision-making and avoiding turnovers and just making the right kind of read and the right decision in the moment has been a big part of it. And he's got good players. I mean, you mentioned Zay Flowers has been a really good player. Andrews and Isaiah Likely are two really good tight ends. And now he's got Derrick Henry that also keeps defenses honest. Because let's face it, if you have Derrick Henry in the backfield and your play action game changes completely, because those safeties and linebackers, they have to be ready for Derrick Henry running the ball. And if you can sell that just half a second that Henry's going to be running the ball, here comes the linebackers toward the line of scrimmage, and oh, there you go. Rashad Bateman is wide open over the middle where the linebacker used to be. And not only that, but this year Jackson is hitting that guy in stride, and he's getting yardage after the catch instead of a ball that maybe is thrown behind him a little bit and disruptive. So that's the other thing. He's making the right passes to the right spot after the right decision. And I'm not saying he'll do that Sunday, because the Steelers defense has bothered him, but he's done that consistently this year.
This is where I give him a lot of credit, because I give him a lot of credit for a lot of things. But they asked him about the Steeler issues over the years, and he says, I don't know. Well, that's a really honest answer. Like, I don't know. I mean, the only thing I can think of, Bo, is because they play him all the time. See, against the end, well, they have one loss against an NFC team since he's been there.
That's right. He's 23-1 in his career against the NFC.
That was the Giants game where Saquon did the hook slide at the 3-yard line to close it out. But they only see him once every 4 years. So how do you get ready for somebody you don't really know? The Steelers at least know him, because I think with him, as crazy as it sounds, the way he moves, but if you can take the right angles on him, you can play him. And somehow the Steelers, I think, have figured out, quote, what angles to take against him and when to get him to throw it instead of run it. I that's the only guess, and it's a guess on my part as to why.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because he's missed several games against the Steelers for whatever reason. He's only started four of them, and he's missed a couple for injury. The 1 year he was hurt, and missed both of them at the end of the year. He missed the 1 year when he had the COVID, and we played the game there on a Wednesday in December with all the replacement players. He missed one when they held him out for the playoffs, the last game of the season. So he's only started four games against them. I wrote this up earlier this week. He's 1-3 against them. The only other team he's got a worse record for again is against the Chiefs. And his passer rating against the Steelers is worse than any team. So what's happening? Well, he's thrown some interceptions. Spillane picked them off on a pick six here a few years ago in one of the first plays of the game. And the pressure. The Steelers have sacked him 20 times in those four games. One of them they sacked him 7 times. So that's disrupted their offense. I think the pass rush, the pressure has been a consistent factor, obviously, for Pittsburgh. And Jackson and the passing game just hasn't handled it really well. A lot of teams don't. And that's been one of the things that's been a big factor, I think, in his play against Pittsburgh. And then last year, like I said, they just dropped balls. I mean, they just dropped passes. Bateman dropped, Andrews and Bateman dropped touchdowns on back-to-back plays. Yeah. Aguilar had a ball go through his hands. It was just one of those weird days. And you might remember the game a few years ago. The Ravens had a chance to win. Harbaugh goes for two, and Andrews passed or the two-point conversion to Andrews is incomplete at the goal line.
Right.
But I think the pressure has been one of the biggest things. I think that Steelers' pressure has really been able to disrupt him. But again, he's only played in four. He's only started four of the games against him, which is interesting.
Bo, terrific. Really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for the time, the analysis, the insight.
All right, you bet. Thank you for having me. Have a good day.
You too. Bo Smolka joining us on the show today, brought to you by good friends at Brewers Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for the weekend now. Imports Domestics Microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.